You are tuned into the Bernard Bergen Podcast. Like, review, or share this episode with those you love and lead.
I have the pleasure of talking to someone I have gotten to know over the past 2 years, and I've just seen his consistency, I've seen his faith. More importantly, I've seen him make every adjustment to get to the goals that he said that are important to him, from publishing his book to completing his certification to become a recovery coach. I am on the phone with business owner Tony Jackson.
Thank you, Bree. Thank you for allowing me to come on, man. It's a privilege to be on your show.
Right at the top, Tony, let's talk about writing your book and what it felt like to complete something that was so transparent for you.
Well, Bernard, when I first started writing the book, it was a challenge. You know, with me being a high school dropout, it was real hard. And I really didn't want to express things about me because I was ashamed from where I came from. Mm. Thank God I was in the community with men who held me accountable. And that made me be transparent about my life.
Wow.
It was a struggle. Don't get me wrong. It was a struggle. Plus with me having to drive trucks every day and trying to time block and writing this book, it was real hard. But I was able to do it. I took 30 minutes out of every day. Even if I didn't get but a paragraph down, that's what I did.
Yeah, I love that. Now, you had a system. You talked about 30 minutes out of every day and just putting thoughts to paper. And you talked about sometimes talking about what we've been through can be shameful. What kept you going through writing that book?
What kept me going, because I knew someone needed this story. I know somebody need to hear this. And plus, it would, you know, I needed to get this out of me because I had been holding on to this for so long. I had actually just buried this. It was, it was something that I hid from a long time. And I just didn't want to talk about it. And I knew it needed to come out. Because the more I was writing, the more I felt better. Because it was like a, you know, like the pressure on the pipe, it was like I was just releasing all that.
That was a great way of phrasing that. You've also had, you know, people in your industry, you're a business owner in the trucking industry. You've had people you're connected to read your book, and some with immediate impact because they work with you every day. They see your integrity, they see your character, but they didn't know what you grew through. Talk about that just for a bit.
Mm. That's a good question. When I'm gonna go a little deeper than that. When my aunt read the book, she was shocked. She didn't have no idea that I had been through all these challenges. She kept me on the phone for a whole hour, and she kept telling me that I was lying. And I'm like, why do I have to lie? You know, she said, I never knew this about you. She said, the man that you are now, I just can't see that in you. But like I told you, everything I wrote, it's true. I mean, why would I lie about something like that? And they still can't believe that it's me. They think I just wrote a fake book.
Wow. Man, how hard is that here you are sharing some of the deepest things that transformed your life, and even close family members can't really digest all that you've been able to go through because you look nothing like what you've been through.
Right.
Now, what would you say was some of the biggest aha moments as people would tell you what parts of your book stuck out to them?
That's a good question. The aha moments will be, how did you make it in the streets like you did, having a $500 habit every day? You just like It said, you don't look like what you've been through. How did you survive that? How did you make the money to support your habit every day? You know, that was a ha-ha moment. And just my appearance now, like, I just don't look like it, you know, for all the things that I have been through. That was a real big ha-ha moment for me.
Yeah. Now, just to stay there a bit, what would you say to people who feel that they can't overcome their habit? Like, we were a part of a conversation recently, and one of the gentlemen, he was like, you know, I'm working, and, you know, my clients love me, love what I do, but at the end of some of my days, I'm so stressed that I turn to, you know, some drug use at the end of the day. And I know I should be doing better, but this is just my lifestyle. This is how I cope. What would you say to people in that situation?
I will first say that you have to admit the problem. You have to acknowledge that you have a problem. And then you have to reach out for some help. But if you never admit that you have a problem, you'll keep bumping your head. Because a lot of people feel like that they can beat it. You can't beat it, and you cannot control drugs. Drugs control you at the end of the day. You know, if about it. You know, and you have to make sure that you surround yourself around the right people. If you keep going back into them environments, you're going to keep doing the same things you've been doing. You have to admit the problem first, that you have a problem. A lot of people feel like they don't have a problem.
Okay. I love that. Now, in the book, what section would you say gives people the most hope or most strategy on walking through maybe some of their addictions, or maybe some of the beliefs that come from maybe serving some time in prison? Because you went from prison sentence to purpose driven. So I know there is some meat and potatoes to help people find purpose as they move forward.
I'm gonna go two ways with that. Now, my favorite chapter in my book is fatherhood, because I lost relationship with my children. How over a period of time I was able to get my relationship back with them. But almost 13 or 14 years, I didn't have a relationship with my children. I had lost that. But with me staying consistent and never giving up, I was able to get my relationship back with my children. Now, we're not where we need to be, but we didn't came a long way. It was a point in my life where my children didn't want to talk to me. They won't have nothing to do with me. But I just didn't let that stop me. I know it's a lot of men that's going in and out of prison that lose relationship with their children. So that's some hope for them that it can be done. But you can't give up, because you got to think about how you left them. You know, you can't expect them to just pick up and get back on your team. And that's how I was for a while. I had straightened my life out, you know, maybe 6-7 years. And I was expecting my children to get back on my team. But they said, no, you're going to have to prove yourself. And that's what I did. I proved myself by staying consistent.
Wow. Now, how hard is that, though, Tony? Because it's your baby saying, why are you contacting me now? Why are you reaching out? Like, I don't want that. I don't want to spend time with you. What would you say to men, even women, feeling that rejection from their own children?
I would say, no, the number one thing, just remember what you done. Remember what you took them through. You know, when you was doing your thing, after partying or drugging or drinking, whatever you're doing, remember the times that you didn't spend with your children when you had the opportunity to. And I had opportunities to spend with my children, but I chose the street life. Or I made a lot of promises that I didn't keep. It was times that I used to tell my children, hey, I'm gonna come get you. I never showed up. So you can imagine how those children felt. You know, you have to think about the things that you did. And a lot of people don't. They think that just because, well, I didn't got my life back on track, my kids should get back on my team. It don't work like that. They got feelings also, just like you got feelings.
Yeah. Wow, well said. Lots of tough talk, but we need it. It's hard for parents at times to digest that they let their own children down. So well done with, you know, just opening up your heart and sharing that. Now tell me, to those who think, man, I've been through the prison system, you know, I've been through drug use, I don't think I'll ever be able to find a family or find love. Tell us about your journey to finding love, your journey to rebuilding your family, and also remind them to not give up on that concept of family and that concept of love.
Yeah. Nard, I was truly blessed with some great parents. Now, my parents, they gave me some tough love, but they were still there for me. So you always have to find someone that would love you for who you are, no matter what. That's because you need accountability. And sometimes as men or women, we don't want no accountability. You have to find somebody that will hold you accountable. And when you do that, that can get you to that next level. But first, you got to learn how to love yourself. Because if you don't love yourself, how are you going to love someone else? Love yourself. Start working on the inside of you. And once you start learning yourself and building the inside out, everything else will fall into place. But you cannot expect a family to love you if you're not loving yourself, if you're not doing the self-work. You have to do the self-work.
Man, I love it, man. And, you know, Tony, we've gotten to know each other. We've gotten to work together. And we know that it's from the inside out. We know that we have to do the hard work. Why do you think so many people who have spent some time in the prison system, why do you think so many people who have went through some issues with drug use and drug abuse struggle with doing the hard work and getting back to a place where they can love themselves?
Because it's an easy way out. Once life hit them upside the head, they just want to give up. They don't want to go through the struggle. Mm. You have to go through the struggle. Everything is not going to be easy. Life is going to happen regardless. And you got to learn how to walk through life. And that's why I say you have to work from the inside out. Yeah, you might not get a great job when you first get out of prison. Start somewhere. If it's at McDonald's, if it's at Wendy's, you have to start somewhere. When you start that work somewhere, that builds that momentum up. And then you can get that good job where you start out. But you have to start somewhere. And some people got a lot of pride. I'm not working at McDonald's. I'm not working at Wendy's. And they don't want to do no hard work. But God will bless you if you just take advantage of what he puts in your face. Sometimes God is putting you to a test to see if you really want to change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that. Let's talk about some of your tests. What were some of those things that shifted you? I remember you shared a story with me about when you decided to enter the trucking industry, and the answer wasn't immediately yes. Take us through that.
Yeah. When I first applied to a truck driving school, they told me that they would accept me. After they did a background check, came back, they didn't want to accept me because of my past. And then I was hurt. Because I was so excited. Man, they was telling me, hey, you're going to get to hit the road. Now I got a good career. I made it start taking care of my family, myself. You know, things finna look up for me. But when that answer came back, I was so hurt. You know, I was about to give up. But just like I was talking about accountability, having the right people around you, lucky I had a friend. And a friend kept telling me, hey, man, keep applying. Keep applying. And that's what I did. I applied to like four more truck driving schools and all three of them denied me. But the last one accepted me. Mm. So that was a blessing. Thank God that he was in my corner. Now, if he wasn't in my corner, possibly I could have went back to the streets and started selling drugs. But thank God that he corrected me.
Yeah, yeah. That's big, TJ. Now, I know that you care deeply about the next generation and making sure that they understand that they don't have to be the only ones who can't make it from some struggles. What would you say to them? Because for many of them, they feel like no one's in their corner. No one's there to help them. What should we say to them? How should we talk to those who are looking to us as an example? And, you know, they would say sometimes, well, you did it. You were on drugs. You were in the street life. What would you say to them?
I would say, don't take the path that I did. Because the path that I took, I wasted 20 years of my life, man, to the street life. And look, now I got to work twice as hard to get what I need to get. If you start where you at, by the time you reach the age of 45, you could be a millionaire if you follow the plan, the steps that you need to. So don't do what I did. Make a different choice, because this is a hard road, I promise. You know, one of the biggest regrets I got that I have a felony on my record. It's a lot of, I couldn't get a lot of jobs because of my record. Even after my felony had been 18 years old, people still wouldn't accept me because of that. That's going to follow me for the rest of my life unless I get a pardon. But that's just a bad feeling, you know? You feel like I didn't gave my time back, I'm doing the right thing, but people still want to throw this in your face. So don't do the things I did. Listen to me. I would have made the mistakes for you.
Wow. Wow. I'm going to repeat that, because I think sometimes we miss that there is a history that people will keep bringing back up. And I think sometimes when we haven't prepared to do the hard work, when we are a bit oversensitive at times, when they throw back our past in our face, we let it break us down. How do you keep going when even that happens? Mm.
You have to be in the right community. You have to be around people that will help you during the time. But when you're in that community, you got to be able to speak up about it. Don't hold things in. And as men, all of us, we that's one of our downfalls. We don't want to talk about our problems. You have to talk about the problem. When things like that happen, if I don't want to share with a whole group, let me call Bernard. Let me call somebody in my G-man that can help me out, that I can express my feelings to. You have to have some people that will help you out during those times. But you got to release it.
All right. Tell me how it felt when you went to some of your first book sign-ins and you were getting feedback. I mean, we already know that for some, they were shocked that you had lived through so much. But for others, they saw you really do the work to change your life, and they were just challenged to do better themselves. Tell us a bit about that.
Man, that was very exciting. I had a good friend that came up to me, and he just started crying. He was like, man, I cannot believe you wrote a book. I can't believe that you let everything out to the world like this. How did you do that? I said, it's not for me. It's for someone else. And a lot of people don't understand it. I had friends tell me, hey, man, you crazy. Ain't no way I would tell nobody that. Why not? You don't know how many people that you could save. If I could just save one, that's good. Because that one could tell another one, and it can keep going on. But I have to get out of fear. Fear holds us back. And I just, one of my old pastors came up to me, and he was like, he didn't have no idea. And he was like, man, I am so happy for you. I'm glad that you was able to let this out. That is a joy for us, especially for our youth department, you know. So those were some, you know, blessing times there for me.
I love it. So people on the fence, people who are nervous about telling your story and telling your story publicly, what Tony is challenging you to do is think about the people who need you. Think about the people who need you to go beyond your current comfort zone. You've already been through a lot. How can you use what you've been through to build a bridge for someone else? So Tony, thank you for doing that. Now I want to go here with you, Tony. I remember when you started talking about becoming a recovery coach. Tell me why that is important and help us understand what a recovery coach is.
That was very important to me, because I want to help people. I want to help people that have been through the struggle, because I know how it is. When you've been addicted to a drug, especially crack controls you. It's like it's your master. You know, when they speak, you obey to it. You know, if you land in your bed and they tell you to get up and go get it, you're going to go up and get it. So I know how that is. It's like the crack is the devil. It's the enemy. Mm-hmm. I don't wish that on nobody, man. That's a bad feeling. So I want to get out here and tell many people as I can. I want to help people. And like I said, a lot of people are ashamed. They don't want to talk about their past. And sometimes behavior takes us back to our ways, our old ways. And a lot of people, they just don't want to go through the hard work. But I'm a living witness that you can make it. I'm a living witness that you can be successful in anything that you want to do. But you have to put the work in behind it. Mm-hmm. Coach is just like what is a coach, somebody who can hold you accountable, someone who, if you're about to go relapse, they could call you at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, someone who can give you steps to follow. It's just that a coach will help you through the process of your, once you started getting clean. You know, you go through a rehab, or you might go through a sober living, and once you get out, a lot of people don't have nobody to hold them accountable. So you reach out to a coach, and that coach can hold you accountable. 9 times out of 10, a lot of people relapse as soon as they get out of treatment because they don't have nobody in their corner. And a lot of their family members don't understand. Say, like a family member, they might celebrate and say, hey, let's have a glass of wine. He cannot have a glass of wine because he's an addict, and it takes him back to his old ways. So you need somebody that's going to keep their foot on their neck.
Man, I love that, Tony, and thanks for going deep. What you made me think of as you shared and shared the importance of having a coach, someone who can hold you accountable, someone who can check in on you, someone who has the training and knowledge slash experience to know when you're lying to them. What it triggered for me was, for many, you know, we just started the year 2019. We heard that 2018 was the year of the opioid crisis. You know, and our current president actually has a message, and I wanted to play that message. And then I'd just love to hear your thoughts, and I'll just read some of the stats as well. So give me one moment while I cue that message up. And I'll share my screen so you can see it as well. And all right, found it. And let me know when you can see my screen, TJ.
I can.
All right, and I'll play the message.
For generations, the American dream was built on the idea that our children will live longer and more prosperous lives than ever before. Tragically, for many of our fellow citizens, the opioid crisis has replaced the American dream with the nightmare of addiction, a terrible, terrible situation. Drug overdoses are now the leading cause of accidental death in the United States. Every day, about 175 Americans die of drug overdose, and the majority of these deaths are caused by opioids. That is why my administration has declared the opioid crisis a national public health emergency. The opioid epidemic is truly the crisis next door. But too often, we forget that. Stigma, silence, and a lack of information prevent us from confronting this crisis as we should. We launched this website to bring together the stories behind the opioid epidemic. These are stories of despair and shock, but also of community, recovery, and hope. I invite every American affected by the opioid crisis to share their story. Working together, we will end the stigma of addiction, defeat the opioid epidemic, and overcome the crisis next door.
Wow, TJ. Wow. 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 It says in 2018, more than 2 million Americans will suffer from addiction to prescription or illicit opioids. Opioids killed more people last year than either car accidents or gun violence. As a recovery coach, TJ, tell us a little bit about your industry. Tell us a little bit about what we don't know to the people who just don't know.
In a field like this, you have to go deep with a person. And a lot of people are suffering with things at home. You know, they might not be in a good environment. They might be in a house where someone is using drugs. Someone might be selling drugs. And they've been around that all their lives. Or they might be dealing with depression. And once they start dealing with depression, the first thing they want to do is use. Or they got people that's using in front of them. That's why it's so important that we share our stories. Not just me as a recovery coach. Everybody out there got a story. Share your story because there's so many people that we can help. Just like they say, that's the number one cause. And with you holding on to your story, look how many lives could be saved if you just share that story.
The Bernard Bergen Podcast is brought to you by BernardBergen.com. Visit for more on human performance insights and results coaching.